This program was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future. Today I have with me
Tanya Kopechko.
And I'm Stuart Burks. Tanya, you've been talking about the displaced people in the recording last week. You said a lot about your father. There were various other people involved in this process.
Yes.
You've got children from that group finding the stories of their parents, and so can you say some more about how they were received, their experiences, where they came
Certainly.
From?
Certainly, yeah. Well, yeah. I suppose really it's about how we started the project as well. So I have friends who write in New Zealand, and I must say that they have been on my back to write my father's story for a very long time. They're people who knew my family.
Yes, yeah.
And they know that the story itself is interesting.
I have to ask, did your father talk much about his experiences?
He obviously talked more than I realised that some of my friends' parents talked about theirs. Mm. So that's interesting. I didn't think he talked much at all, but I realised that I'm quite lucky to know what I have. And he also kept papers, which is useful.
Okay.
But what happened was that I came to Palmerston North to live again after I had retired from my work in Wellington. And I work here, but only doing what I like to do. So the perfect life in Palmerston North. And, of course, my friend said, well, now you've got time to write the story, haven't you? So I realised that it was about time I did something.
Yeah.
And I had one of those weird experiences where I woke up at 3 o'clock in the morning, like a ding. And I said to myself, but why would I write just my story? All my friends have got stories. Because, you see, I was born and raised and educated in Palmerston North. And I would say that my good friends and our family friends were all other displaced people.
Now, this is an interesting... So your father came from overseas, your mother was English...
New Zealand.
Was New Zealand... Ah, okay.
Yeah.
But you still... A lot of your social circle was...
Absolutely.
Was that... Did you find that the established New Zealanders tended to mix more just with other established New Zealanders, or...?
Oh, that's a tricky and interesting one. Because, of course, I had a family that was in two. So my mother's family, that's getting into territory where my mother's family, I think they found my father exotic, but also I think that to some degree they were not happy that my mother had married a foreigner.
Okay.
And other people found that. A lot of the people that came married Kiwis, and not all the marriages lasted.
Yeah.
That would be true to say.
Because I was going to say, how would the migrants fit in? Obviously,
So the other thing that happened is that most of the migrants, and I can speak for Palmerston North, most of the migrants knew other people that came with them on the ships. And they formed good friendships amongst us. It could be within their own culture, but it could be a bit broader than that. So, for example, my father, who worked for the post office, so he met lots of DPs, but my father didn't know any other Belarusians. There weren't any.
Did the post office employ tailors?
No, he worked.
So they wanted skilled people.
Yeah, and he became a sorter. He became a sorter at the post office. A postie,
Now, this is a bit like we talk now about all these refugees who are qualified doctors and drive taxis.
He had his own tailoring business in Palmerston North, but at that time, tailoring was changing. And you bought your clothes off the peg in a department store. So he wasn't happy with tailoring. And quite frankly, he was good at it, But it wasn't his choice of trade. His parents were very poor. They worked on a farm that belonged to the Radzivills in Belarus, and they were farm labourers, and people often were very hungry, and they wanted anything for their children not to be that. And so an apprenticeship came up to be the apprentice for a tailor in a nearby village or town, and so he was told that's what he had to do. So that was that. Anyhow, he got to Palmerston North, and he had married my mother. And, of course, Palmerston North offered opportunities, and there were jobs. And he was not a stupid man, I must say. He was a very bright man. He survived the war, so you'd have to be pretty bright to do that. And he did. They lived in Coles buildings, and he did go and find work in at the railway. Coles buildings was on the square where the city council is now. It was quite a well-known business area, and it had flats at the top, and that's where he had his tailoring business, and that's where I, when I was born, where I was brought up initially. But it was right next door to the railway, and quite noisy and dirty, so they wanted to shift from there. But the so anyhow, my father tried working for the railway. He didn't like that because it was too dirty. And noisy. And then a job came up at the post office, and he applied for that and got it. So he became a postman, and then he became a sorter. And he worked in the post office all his life. So, yes, skilled labour, and they were bright people. But sort of going back to my friends. So basically the small team of us who were doing this all this project, we all went to school together. In Palmerston North, or we all went to university together, or our families were family friends. And so my father, so our family had two sorts of friends. We had, or two sorts of groups, I suppose. There was my mother's side of the family, who were her family, that, and we mixed with them. And then there was this other sort of family of Eastern Europeans and Europeans who had no language in common, because my father's friends were Bulgarian and Romanian and Greek and Latvian and Lithuanian and Ukrainian and Russian, all of whom had fled. And they could. Some of them could speak each other's languages, and some of them couldn't at all. Some of them knew a bit of German because of their experiences during the war. So they all spoke English to each other. But what they had in common was similar values. Because even if you look at Greece, which is warm and Mediterranean, and you compare it with Belarus, which is cold and northern, values of family. Sitting around a table and sharing food, gardening, going on picnics together, singing and dancing are similar values. And that's what they did every weekend.
And that was quite different from the Kiwi?
Oh, I would say so, yes, absolutely. Yeah, we felt like we were living in a different culture. And and that and so my friends were children of those people.
Can I just ask then, because I'm also from a mixed background myself, and what I found was, say, in going to school and so on, the dominant culture sort of dominates, and those from the dominant culture think all these other people are the same as them. But then when you get, like you say, you get into the homes and the families, you find there's suddenly something quite different. Is that, was that your experience?
Yeah, one of my friends, it was more marked than others. She said that as she stepped in the door, they would speak the parents' language. When she stepped out of the door, she stepped into Kiwi culture.
But I mean, for the normal Kiwis around, they just see these people as these migrants who are more or less the same as them, and not knowing that in their homes and in their communities there's a different.
Well, to be quite frank, we were all white.
Yes.
It's different for the poor migrants and refugees who have come here from other cultures. It is. You know, if you've got a conservative outer culture. Then it makes a difference if you stand out. And we have to be honest. Look at the way the Chinese have been treated in this country. You know, they because you look different, you can be treated differently. And there's no point in hiding that. It's true.
That's changing now.
It is changing, but it's true.
Yes. Yeah.
But we did experience our own set of prejudice as well. It's not good having a foreign name in this country. People don't know how to spell it properly. Some people are very kind about it, and other people, certainly in the past during the Cold War, were not at all kind about it. From my perspective, I have two names that are weird, because Tanya, when I was young, was not around in New Zealand. It became popular sometime in the 80s, 70s, late 70s. It got adopted in this country. Before that, it didn't exist. And so that was a weird enough name. And then Kapitko is a very unusual name. It's not a very, very widely used name, even in Ukraine and Belarus. It's not a Smith name. It's not Kuznetsov, which is Smith in Russian, the most popular name like it is in English. Smiths are, because it was a huge occupational group around the world. And on top of it, its spelling is not easy for Kiwis. It's not spelt phonetically by our standards, I suppose, but it is spelt correctly for the historical period of how it was recorded in the UK. And so I'd, as a child, which wasn't pleasant because I would have coped with it better as an adult, but as a child, there were children who would tease me at school about my name. And would infer that I was a communist because it was the Cold War, which was not very pleasant. And when I went home and told my father that somebody had called me a communist, such and such word, which I won't repeat on the radio, he was furious. Because, of course, that was the reason why he'd left. And most of these DPs had left.
It's like some of the Jewish people here in the Second World War who come from Germany.
That's another thing that we could also say about the 5,000. When I say they came from Central, Eastern and Southern Europe, if you look at the ship's records of the people that came, it doesn't mention Jewish people, because on the ship's records, it largely lists their country of origin. But if you've got any knowledge of Jewish surnames, you will understand that Abel Strom or whatever is a Jewish name. But unless there happens to be a record in the archives which states religion, and they decide to write what their religion is, then you wouldn't know except for your inside knowledge about surnames and who they might belong to. And, of course, some people had changed their names out of fear as well. So that's quite interesting, because there were Jewish people who came that way. But also I know that there were other DPs, Jewish people, who came via the Jewish societies in New Zealand who brought them out under humanitarian status and sponsored quite a number of them. So in the bigger picture of what we might do with this project in the future, and really it is about inviting all the descendants of these DPs to quickly start writing and writing down what they remember and doing some research and writing up their stories for the very least for their families.
Because I should say, this isn't just writing a book. You've got an exhibition coming up. There's going to be, is it a workshops film. At the City Archives and
the film? Yes, that's right. Yes,
and
so on. Correct.
So, and the City Archive here is very keen on helping people develop these stories.
And we have the most brilliant resource here in Palmerston North. It's one of the best archives in New Zealand, I would say. But what I really, what is very, very important is that these people start writing up these stories while they can. Because of the restrictions on information and the complexity of it all, those that have heard stories have now got the ability to put it in a context and write something.
Yeah.
But grandchildren have never heard these stories. Well,
there's another aspect too. They can write it, but they can also record it.
Absolutely, you're right. So people need to do that. And of course the DPs, the 5,000 DPs, went all across New Zealand because after their 6 weeks in Pāhiatua camp, was between 6 weeks and a year.
Hmm.
It was only supposed to be 6 weeks, but New Zealand kindly took, for example, some women with a couple of children or one child. Well, it took longer than 6 weeks to find a job for a woman with a child.
Because
they were placed in jobs.
It wasn't just you've had your 6 weeks off, they were
contracted in a job for 2 years.
Yeah.
And they had to stay in that job for 2 years. And they had to report to the local police, because they were aliens, if they went out of the town or the place where they were placed.
Okay.
And they did that right up to the period that they were naturalised. Aliens had to report to the local police if one of them wanted to, let's say, and New Zealand government often split families, adult families. Okay. So some might be living in Whanganui and some might be living in...
So two brothers came and...
Correct. If one brother wanted to visit the other brother in Whanganui and he lived in Palmerston North, he was theoretically supposed to go to the local police and say, on the weekend I'm going to visit my brother in Whanganui. And some of them, you can read the files, if you can get them from MB or that, you can read that they were fined for not identifying that they had left. So somebody was letting people know that these people had, you know. Some of them got in trouble for this, you know. So, they were placed in jobs for a two-year contract. They were only allowed to change to another job if they found another job during that period and that job was approved.
Okay, yeah.
And then they could. So they were sent to work in hydro power stations, electric power stations in the South Island. Hutt was building a big electric power station, so they worked there. Or they there were companies that were wanting labourers after the World War II took them. So, for example, one of the stories is the Ozolins family, a Latvian family, who settled in Palmerston North. They were older refugees in that they were in their 40s. Some of the ideal skilled labour refugee was a single man in his 20s or 30s. These were a little bit older. But anyhow, this man was skilled in woodwork, and so he was offered a job by Odlins, the wood company. And so was his brother-in-law who came. And his wife was skilled in knitting and sewing, and so she was offered a job at Manawatu Canvas, Jaggard Mills, and then the Manawatu Knitting Mills, where she stayed on. So that's the sort of example of placements.
Yeah. Yep.
So, yes, they came as skilled labour, and so therefore there was no follow-up afterwards in terms of let's say mental health issues, because these people have been through trauma. Yeah.
Well, you mean, and when you say no follow-up, they didn't look to see if there were issues, but they weren't followed up?
Yeah, well, what we've discovered in the process of our research is that virtually every family... Somebody suffered from PTSD,
post-traumatic stress disorder. Yeah.
And it was just covered up. The families just coped and got on with life. And when I say there was no care...
the same with return service.
Oh, absolutely, what it was like at that time.
Yeah.
Whereas now, when refugees come, we have a whole program that is wrapped around them, which includes mental health assistance, financial assistance, you know, and blah, blah, blah. So the Pāhiatua camp did its job as best it could within a minimum of 6 weeks, and then boom, off you go, you know. So there's a whole lot of backstories that exist with this, which is absolutely fascinating. But really, it started because I was pushed into writing my dad's story, and I thought of my friends that I went to school with, Greeks, Romanians, Bulgarians, some of whom were my father's friends. And so I emailed them in the morning after the 3 o'clock bing in my head and said, look, would you like to do a project where we research and write up our parents' stories? And I thought, oh, there'll be some hesitancy. I probably got all my replies within 1 hour. Yes, we're in.
Oh, good.
And to be honest, what we wanted to do was just start.
Yes.
And this thing already has escalated. We started last year, at the beginning of the year. We applied for funding to the Earl Trust. They very kindly have substantially funded us, which is wonderful.
Yeah.
And our desire is to really get other DPs to do this research work, because it's very important that these stories are told in New Zealand, because you picked up something earlier in our interview. These people made considerable impact on New Zealand culture at a time when New Zealand was very homogenous. It wasn't particularly diverse at all. And you've got people that became architects, that opened restaurants, that that imported food that New Zealanders were not eating. Now, I guess a lot of young people would just assume that we've always eaten olives and salamis and feta cheese and moussaka and pizzas. And No. You know, back in the 50s and 60s, it was just very simple food that we had here. And it was the Greeks who were renowned for running the fish and chip shops, and the Italians who ran beautiful beautiful restaurants. Yes, before that, there were other earlier refugees who had set up vineyards and that. So there was a history of some diversity from Europe. But these people made huge impacts on our culture. Well, and, of course, celebrations started where they would bring their dance groups along and everything. Okay. And New Zealanders started to feel something more of a diverse vibrancy going on.
That was something I was going to ask, because now in 2024 they talk about Palmerston North and all these different ethnic groups and a multicultural council and so on. So the city celebrates the diversity. Did you find in your childhood these people from all the different countries that you're talking about, were they able to share their culture? Was the Palmerston North population interested in that?
Yeah, I think they were, and to some degree they did, if they had reasonable numbers within the community.
Okay.
So my mind takes me back to when I was young. I can remember the Dutch community.
Yeah.
They were very strong here after the war in the 50s and the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a wonderful dance group with all the clogs and the wonderful starched curved hats and everything. And they used to have a Dutch day in the square.
Okay.
So, to my understanding, until 1990, when the first concept of Festival of Cultures started. Mm. It was International Dance Day.
Yeah.
International Celebration for 1990 was the first one, and it involved rangatane at that time. I was the arts advisor in the city, so I remember back to there. The Community Arts Council was involved, but it was spearheaded between the City Council and rangatane as a response to the government's concept of biculturalism.
Okay.
It was an extremely forward-thinking idea that our City Council did.
So you made it multicultural rather than
biculturalism? They made it a multicultural greeting towards rangatane.
Yes.
That was the intention of the very first one.
Okay.
And they, I think there might have been a hiatus after the first one, and then it started as the international festival in Palmerston North.
Yeah.
And then the Multicultural Council was founded. Mm-hmm. and eventually they became part of the organisation of it. But it started before the Multicultural Council started. Yeah. That's its history. And at the very beginning, I was one of the compeers with Mona Williams, who was at Teachers College at that time, and the woman who's been on my back most to write my family history. At the very beginning, we had representations of the cultures that were in Palmerston North at that time who were more youthful then.
Yes. Yeah.
So we had the Greeks and we had Chileans and we had Argentinians. There was a lot of different Latin American groups than even now, because at that time we were receiving migrants from those countries, because of course they had civil wars going on, revolutions going on, and so we took Chileans. And I remember there were two Chilean dance groups.
Okay.
And there were Greek, there was a Greek dance group. Sometimes the Greek community brought them up from Wellington, because it was a very well established group there. So I would say that over time the nature of the performances in Festival of Cultures has changed according to who the current youthful migrants are. Because most of the Greeks that lived in Palmerston North then, their children have all moved on, and some of them are here, and they're doctors and lawyers and whatever and whatever and whatever, headmistresses and blah, blah. They've all done very, very well. A lot of them have shifted away and drifted away from their culture. And and if you don't have a substantial number of your own culture in a city, you're not going to teach the young ones that culture.
And the young ones are going to... I was going to ask just very briefly, because we're nearly at time, but the standard problem with migrants, they come in, obviously they want to build a better life for their children, but they have a certain set of values that they brought, and the children have this conflict. Do they abide by the parents' values or the values of the culture that they are growing up in? Is that something that came apparent?
Absolutely, and it's easier not to tell your parents some things.
Yes.
It's a simple way of dealing with it.
Okay, in 30 seconds then, does that trigger something in your mind about conflicts you had about...
Oh, yes, I think, you know, my father was quite conservative and he would be very, very concerned about me going out at night when I was at Massey, you know, and everything
as
had to
student,
be... as a student, you know, and everything had to be proper and all that. I had to be home by a certain time and all this sort of stuff, you know. You know, it's shades of bringing shame on the family name, you know. I mean, that's just one example. And that was funny because, of course, I just freely did what I wanted to do and said I was home at 12 o'clock and if I came home at 2 o'clock, so be it. And he didn't know because he was fast asleep snoring and never noticed.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.